Fred Film Radio.
Angela Cerbi, Fred Film Radio from Lovers Film Festival in Torino. Here with Lyle Cash, director of Death and Bullying. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, where can we start talking about your film? First of all, is a film that had a kind of a long gestation, right? Because the film was mainly ready close to 3 years ago, and then you waited. Why did you wait?
Well, the pandemic struck.
Silly question on my side.
I sort of think it was for the best in some ways. It's like I got to make a first film, but finish my sophomore film and develop it as a person and a filmmaker who was 3 years further into my journey of experiencing cinema, thinking about how I wanted to make film. It was like being able to revise in the way you might want to for a second project with your own first baby.
So you needed more time to develop again, because you did actually make changes. Because we saw a version close to 3 years ago, which is different from the one we are screening here.
Yeah, whether I needed time is a sort of separate question. I hope to never be given that much time to complete a film. I think at a certain point, it's like, just finish the edit. However, in this case, it was really, the film got to mature on its own by being kept in the oven for a little while.
You said when we did the intro to your screening that this film is made by the trans community, the film trans community, in every single part of it. I mean, not only actors, but also the crew, the technical crew. Was it easy to build that crew or not?
It was not easy. I mean, the piece that was easy was that there was so much energy and enthusiasm for working on a project like this that was made by trans people about trans people and featuring trans people, which is a very rare combination, unfortunately. The thing that was obviously difficult was building a crew of that size at a budget level that we were working with. So finding the resources to put together such a large crew, you know, sometimes we had 20-person crew on set. Not the piece that was not difficult was forming it with a trans team. We formed T4T Productions, which was sort of our loose collaborative, the same year that we put the call out. And a big part of the mission was exactly what we did, putting people who were trans in front of and behind the camera.
So did you ever have to not choose a trans person to do a job because he was not professionally good enough?
It's not that people were not professionally good enough. It's that we didn't have the money to do so. I mean, a question that's sometimes asked is like, how do you form a feminist set, or how did you create such a trans positive set? And I think it's sort of an inflation of what happened. The fact is, if you don't have the resources and the budget to pay people a living wage, it's just factually is not. I mean, like, of course, I was at the helm, but you know, in the future, it would be incredible to be able to pay the skilled trans people who I would have loved to have joined me at the level that they deserved. So that was the real challenge, was finding a balance between, you know, a lot of the like cis, the non-trans allies who worked with us, they filled in where I just could not afford to hire the trans professionals who were kick-ass at their jobs.
Yeah. I understand. Let's talk about the content and the story. We were laughing earlier during the day. We were talking to each other when I told you that the film was weird enough, and you would say, oh, you're so honest. Why I'm not, which is weird for me, is not diminishing, is a compliment, because it's weird in the sense of intriguing and stimulating to, you know, capture your attention. How did you come up with this plot, and was it something that flew out of you very easily, or was something that you had to elaborate on longer?
I knew I wanted to make a film about grief. It was like the flavor of emotion that I was dealing with at the time. And I really wanted to avoid anything autobiographical or something that existed in the world that we live in. I wanted something completely adjacent to reality. So I am not a bowler. There's nothing about this that's true to my life or authentic to some kind of trans presentation of like an actual bowling league of people. The thing that attracted me to bowling actually had more to do with, you know, what it visually represented to me and what it called up. So obviously there's like the really obvious and sort of like ridiculous and campy and over-sexualized piece of this is that bowling balls have three holes. And I felt like, okay, looking for something that also has three holes, like trans men, what can I find in my environment? And then, I also just, there's only so many places where people orient themselves to a horizon, and desire was also a big part of putting this piece together. And some of those places are, you know, like, when we're at a funeral, we all face in the same direction. When you're at church, when you're at the ocean, and also when you're at a bowling alley, and when you're in the cinema.
That's a nice comparison.
Yeah, and when you have a horizon in front of you that you can't quite touch, for me, that has always evoked, like, really deeply desire and grief.
You also you managed to address a couple of the genre of film, of movies inside of your film, because there is like kind of a thriller-ish part, the death, because something happens during the film that we have to find out why and who did it, and bullying, and the comedy behind bullying, behind all the bullying part, which is a very, very important part of the American culture, at least as we from Europe see it. Why this choice? What's this choice of using those issues, but with this tone, because the tone is really light and funny?
Some of that is just the films that I enjoy and consume. Like, I love John Waters. I did not want to make a tragic film about trans death, because we've seen that 10 million times. You know, I think it's not just Europeans see Americans in this way. It's also Americans see themselves in this way. It's such a nostalgic pastime that also evokes a certain era that could capture both like my hipster millennial queer generation and their aesthetics, but also the aesthetics of the women who are represented in the film who are also queer. That's the world that they grew up in. So it was a tie-in that also let me get away with making a very nostalgic film.
Yeah. But, you know, the good old days.
Exactly.
The good old days are back.
Yeah.
In this. And did you document yourself about this, the creation of this team of bowler who are all lesbians, which are each one of them is a character by herself and very specific. And how did you create this?
How did I document the process?
Yeah, and then through the documentation, you create those specific characters.
Oh my God. I mean, we did, it was like so hard to even make a movie, the documentation of like some kind of behind the scenes mode.
Yeah, but it's something in the back of your mind,
sure,
that clicked with you to create, to write those.
So I had a script, but I also worked with a lot of trans actors who either had very little screen experience, were aspiring actors, or were not actors in any capacity. And so a style that I wanted to really work with, and a mode of filmmaking I wanted to work with, was taking the individuals off screen who made an impression on me as people and as individuals, and bringing parts of their selves to the characters. So some of the women on the bowling team, they have the same name off screen, and whatever their particular flavor or approach or the way that they move or their affect or how they felt about the team, that's in the film. So there is like some sort of documentary piece that's not entirely birthed out of the back of my brain. Though none of these people were bowlers. So it was sort of about inserting these deeply queer characters who sort of didn't need any creative elaboration, and then inserting them into like a very fictional environment and staged environment.
Was it difficult to work with those people? Was it, I mean, technically and productively complicated to get to the end of the shooting, getting what you wanted to get?
I mean, I'm sure like every director in the world says that they wish they had more time. So that of course is true. And especially, you know, I was also a first film director, so I'm not sure that I noticed other people's beginner's luck or the pacing. A lot of this was like we were all learning together as we went, and I think for me, when I watch the film, that's part of the magic of what I see on screen. For this type of project, for the way that we were shooting, and for the sort of dialectic between my vision as a director and then what everyone on my team was able to bring day of, we didn't have any rehearsal time. So because of that relationship, no, it was not difficult. But I think if I had been looking for a different type of performance style, that absolutely would not have been a match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My last question is, what do you want to do next? I mean, this is the logical, regular question, but in your case, there is a specification, because after a movie like this, there was a work of love and of strength and of commitment. Mm-hmm. Which is your aspiration for your next project?
Certainly another work of love, strength, and commitment, though I think I'm looking for a much more pared-down production. As a director, I'm moving in a direction where I have much more of a commitment to the to a different type of performance style that actually does exist in a type of realism. But I mean, concretely, I'm making like a trans Pinocchio film called Wood.
For example.
Yeah, for example. And it's a type of project, again, that I think there's so much that I want to take from Death and Bowling and develop, namely around artificiality and a sort of trans aesthetics and playing with what is real. And so for me, yeah, the story of Pinocchio perfectly captures this dealing with gender and realness and body. And yeah.
Well, now I'm really, really curious to see that.
You will.
Really, really curious. So thanks a lot to Lalikash for having been with us. Lalikash, director of Deaf and Bullying Competition and the Lovers Film Festival in Torino. I'm Angela Cerbi for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.